ladies and gentlemen. Today's opponents on Man versus Train. At the crossing, we have Rick, a 175-pound frustrated man who's running late for work. And on the tracks, we have Bull, a million-pound freight train that takes a mile to stop. Let's see who comes out on top.
You can't beat a train, so don't try. Stop. Trains can't. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. One.
It hasn't been raining in the last couple of months, but it's time for the change in the season. Here come up these clouds.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast. We are back after a long hiatus from Thanksgiving turkey weekend. I'm Jonathan Hernandez. Tommy's here with me. Tommy, how was your Thanksgiving break? What'd you do?
Thanksgiving was good, man. I spent some time with family. I tried to avoid the Lakers for as long as possible, but unfortunately, there were two games that I was forced to watch. So, but besides that, it was good. It was a good break.
Yeah, I mean, the USC Trojans won, beat UCLA this weekend. That was really cool. We now have a chance to go to Rose Bowl if we beat Stanford. Fight on. Nobody can see this, but Tommy can, because we're recording this kind of late tonight, but I'm wearing my USC Snuggie because it's freaking cold in LA. Or what?
Looks very nice.
Cold, yeah, for Los Angeles. So I look like a wizard, a USC wizard. So yeah, so I had a good break too, you know, spend it with friends, family. Didn't really eat that much turkey, but have you ever had Marie Callender's Thanksgiving pumpkin pie?
I have not had that pumpkin pie, no, but I've had other stuff from there.
So I didn't know how good Marie Callender's pies were, but like at work they gave everyone just like a free Marie Callender's like pumpkin pie, and I was just like, oh, it's just a pumpkin pie, like, you know, I've had pumpkin pie before or whatever. And then I ate like the first bite from it, and it was like sweet crack. I was like, whoa, this pumpkin pie is amazing. It's like, now I know why. Like, I pretty much ate 3/4 of that myself, and yeah, I felt pretty guilty afterwards, but. Yeah, so I had a good Thanksgiving break. You know, the Lakers played 3 games since we last recorded. It's Golden State and then Portland and then Indiana back-to-back this past weekend. And I lose track of all the losses. Yeah, I know, seriously. But a lot happened this week, man. I mean, at first, after the Golden State game, I thought this was going to be like the weekend of reckoning. And it kind of was in a different way. I just thought Byron Scott was going to be gone. But, right. You know, the last two old school, like, stones in this organization, Kobe and Byron Scott, one of them fell kind of this weekend and kind of in a different way, with Kobe announcing that he'll be retiring after this season, which, you know, we all knew he was done. We all knew that he kind of knew that he was done as well. I guess I just wasn't expecting the announcement to happen like this weekend. It was like such a random, I mean, maybe it's not random because it's Thanksgiving, but let's just get into it now. We'll get into, you know, our game reactions a little bit later. But I think this is going to be a very Kobe-centric podcast for obvious reasons. But what was your like initial reaction when you heard Kobe's like poetic poem came out about him, you know, leaving basketball behind or something?
Well, you know, the poem itself, or whatever you want to call it, was super emotional. It was, you know, Kobe's a guy who, I've literally watched Kobe my entire basketball watching life. You know what I mean? Like I was telling I think I was telling you and some other people, like, before 1996, all I knew about basketball was Michael Jordan and the Bulls. And that's all like anybody in my family talked about. And that's all I really knew basketball was. And then I started playing and I made a decision to like, oh, I'll check out Kobe. I'll check out the Lakers. They're the local team. I'll watch all the games. I'll get super into it. And I was really young, so I had a lot of time. And yeah. I didn't know there was anything weird about, like, this guy is 17 years old or 18 years old. I didn't know who Kobe was. Like, I was focused on Shaq because he was the best player on the team at that point. But, you know, over time, I slowly watched this guy play. And, like, there were some games he would come in late. Like, I remember, don't quote me on this, but I want to say there was, like, a game his rookie season where we were getting killed by Portland and Kobe. They didn't come up court. He led like this huge comeback because of his energy. And I remember watching this guy and thinking, this guy's going to be like pretty good, I think, one day. You know what I mean? And he ended up becoming Kobe Bryant. And it's just like, it's really sad. That being said, as sad as it is, I like having, I guess, if you want to call it the closure. We've been complaining a lot on this podcast that, you know, the team seemingly lacks direction at times and we don't know what's going to happen and this and that. And it's as sad as it is that Kobe's gone, given it's not like, oh, he's averaging 25 a game. Like, why would he leave? That's so sad. It's not like Magic Johnson suddenly having to retire in his, like, yeah, basically his prime, you know? Kobe's on a steep decline, and we all sort of felt like this was the end, and him admitting this is the end sort of made it, sort of makes it feel a little bit better. So yeah, sad, but happy for him, and glad that he gets to enjoy this, like, you know, his little farewell tour here.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I felt worse when he tore his Achilles than I do now, for, you know, obvious reasons. But I, like, when he tore his Achilles, like, I felt, I didn't think it was going to be this bad, but I kind of knew this was the beginning of the end, kind of. It's been kind of like a slow grind to get to this point, but it is, you know, very sad. Like, my, you know, I literally, same as you, like, I literally started watching basketball the same time that I started watching Kobe play. And it was weird because the first year that I, that the Lakers were in the finals against the Pacers, you know, that was the first time I was kind of introduced to basketball. And I was living in LA at Foothills Middle School, and like, I wanted to be like the hipster dude. I was like, I'm gonna root for the Pacers because, you know, everybody's like watching.
Oh my god,
Lakers.
Seriously?
I was like, I didn't know what I was doing too, so, you know, I didn't have any allegiance. Yeah, I was rooting for Reggie Miller.
Pacers podcast, George Hill, get out of here.
Austin Crozier, I think, was playing Reggie Miller, you know, so I was like rooting for them in the finals, and then, you know, the Lakers won, and I was like, yeah, okay, that's great, whatever. And then, you know, the second year happens, 2001. That's when, like, you know, Kobe broke out before then, but that's when Kobe, like, 2001 is the year where he pretty much told everybody, you know, I improved. I'm not going to back down from Shaq, whatever. He was averaging like 28 points right along with Shaq. And I remember my uncle gave me a call one day, and we were just talking basketball. He's actually a Celtics fan. And my uncle just told me, I didn't really know that much about Kobe Bryant besides, you know, they won the finals last year, and like, he's pretty good up and coming. But my uncle was like, dude, I hate this Kobe Bryant, dude. He's like, I hate him. He's such a jerk. He thinks he's Michael Jordan or something like that. And then for some reason, when I heard that, that made me want to look into him more, because I couldn't understand why my uncle was like, you know, hated him so much. And then, you know, he just made that Michael Jordan comment, and I was like, oh, you know, maybe there's something to this. I'll check this guy out, because why would he annoy my uncle so much, you know? And so I started watching Kobe Bryant play, and I was like, holy crap, this guy is like amazing. Like, you know, my little knowledge of basketball at the time, I was like, oh, I can see why he's like Michael Jordan. It was just like crazy that he ended up being like the closest thing to Michael in the end. And being able to follow that journey has been pretty amazing. And it's been a privilege to like watch him throughout this time. It's definitely going to be weird to not have him in the NBA.
It's going to be weird for a few years. I mean, you know, again, a lot of this contingent, and I'm sure we'll allude to a little bit of this coming up here, but a lot of it's going to be contingent on what happens in the near future in terms of free agency. But are basically our entire lives watching basketball have been watching Kobe develop into the megastar, right, one of the top, you know, arguably top five best players of all time. And now suddenly that's gone. And that's going to be really weird. And, you know, we just picked D'Angelo Russell number two. God knows if, you know, best case scenario, he ends up being something like Kobe, but it's weird.
So
it's
rare,
weird, you know?
Yeah. And I guess the last 3 years have kind of like slowly got us to a point where it's not as weird. But I mean, just not having Kobe in the NBA or not having him play, we've been eased into it because he hasn't played that much the last 3 years. But I don't know. It's just definitely weird that he's like, it's that this is it, you know, even though we've hated the way he's played. I mean, you can separate the two, and we'll talk more about it later. But yeah, it's definitely a weird feeling, you know. Kobe's had like an amazing career. The fact that we were able to be the generation that watched him grow up into, you know, arguably like the second best shooting guard in the world is like crazy, and something that sadly, you know, we're not going to realize it, but we're not going to see something like this like again, at least
probably,
in the league.
Probably ever.
Not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just nuts to think about. So, you know, when thinking about Kobe, I guess just quickly going over his career, what were your, like, if you could pinpoint like a favorite moment or favorite Kobe phase, because you know Kobe's gone through many phases of like his game throughout the years, like what would be your favorite Kobe moment or your favorite Kobe phase, I guess, that you remember?
Okay, my favorite Kobe moment for sure, and this one sticks out to me like crazy, and I feel like this is a play that's got to be one of the most underrated plays in Los Angeles Lakers history. But in the finals in 2009 against Orlando, okay, the game is in Orlando. And what game is that? I mean, I know I'm going to get this wrong. I want to say it was like
game three or four.
Game four. Okay. It was the one that went to overtime. Was that game four?
Yeah.
Because we won that series in five. Okay. So game four. This game is effectively over, dude. Like, Orlando's up by like five with like 45 seconds left or something stupid like that. Okay. Kobe gets the ball off of a rebound. I don't remember if he got the rebound or got it kicked out to him or whatever the case may be. Gets the ball, charges down the court, like looks super out of control, jumps in the air, whips a like pass behind his neck to a trailing Pau Gasol, who catches the ball perfectly in stride for a dunk. Not only was this an amazing pass just in general, it was at such a time in the game, and he did it so fast that we were able to like foul Dwight Howard on the next play, who missed two free throws. And then we set up a play for Fisher to hit a three to send the game into overtime. And we won that game, and the rest is history. Obviously, we end up winning the series in five, but look, would the Lakers have won that series anyway? Most likely, yes. That being said, this play was so ridiculous. Like, who makes a pass like that at that point in the game, in that kind of game? And the reason I like that play so much is because, like, Kobe's, you know, you can YouTube Kobe Bryant buzzer beaters and you'll watch like a 15-minute long video of all of Kobe Bryant's game tying and game winning shots over the course of his career. But for him to make a pass like that at that stage of a game, like in his prime, like he won the MVP of the finals that year, that is absurd. And that's probably my favorite Kobe memory.
Yeah, that was definitely a sweet pass. And you kind of forgot to mention that he did a spin move into the baseline almost. He spun into his thing and jumped, and then he did a like behind the head pass to Pau. It was just insane.
He looked like he had nowhere to go, and somehow he found Pau.
Yeah, you know, like when people show there's another I'll get to my moment, but there's also another moment in that final series where it was reminiscent of like Jordan's like slow motion like switch hands thing I think it was the last game where he pretty much took it to Dwight and then he threw up. He ball faked him in the air and he was like fading away to his left. He ball faked with the right and then he put it back to his left and like made this crazy shot that was pretty much a Jordan like hand switch, but I guess the NBA never caught on to like memorializing that moment or something.
That's right.
Like they did the Jordan thing. But yeah, Kobe's had like numerous amounts of amazing moments like the one you just described, and you know, we could probably spend like 2 hours talking about it. But I guess my favorite moment, and this is a moment that eventually goes into like a phase, because I just remember like there are a few times that Kobe has just really like shocked me in terms of like, holy, you know, like where you're just literally your jaw drops and you're like almost like scared for your life. I was just like, what the hell was that? You know, I was literally like, what the hell was that? Like, I wasn't even excited because I was just like, what the? So there's this moment, I forget what the season was, but this is during the season where the Lakers were struggling a little bit and Kobe needed to go on this like 9-game 40-point streak, right?
50-point.
And there was, exactly. And there's this game in Madison Square Garden, and I think Latrell Sprewell was guarding him, and he just takes it baseline to him, and then he kind of gets lost in the trees. And I was like, what the hell is going on here? And all of a sudden, you see his arm come out from underneath all these players, and he just jams the ball in so ferociously into the rim that you hear it go ka-chung, and then all of a sudden, like all the energy is all the, you know, like the noise is like sucked out of the building. And I was just literally like, whoa, what the hell was that? And you know, that like started like after that, Kobe, it became like Kobe's signature dunk to do like this reverse windmill underneath the basket and bring his arm all of a sudden out of nowhere, like in traffic too.
Yeah.
Like what makes that dunk so impressive is he's always like doing it in traffic, and he's, you know, makes it harder on himself actually when he does that. But it became such like an amazing dunk that like, you know, that became Kobe for me. It became Kobe's like one of his signature dunks. He did it against Kevin Garnett in the playoffs too, and he's done it multiple times. And what's sad is the last time he did it was 2013. He did it on Klay Thompson, and I was like, oh shoot, Kobe still got it, you know. So it's crazy to think how recent Kobe was able to still do some of these things. It's just, you know, father time and just the attrition and the pileup of injuries has really sucked. You know, it's not a talent thing. It's really the injury and the age thing for Kobe. But that was definitely one of the coolest moments that I remember, because it, you know, transitioned into a Kobe phase where he just showed his athleticism time and time in and time again, and eventually became his like go-to calling card dunk to show people like, hey, I still got it, you know?
That's right.
I think he even did it against Matt Barnes in like 2013 as well in the Clipper game, you know? That's the dunk where when he pulls it out, you're like, oh shoot, he can still do that. That's crazy. So
yeah, man.
One of many, many amazing plays in Kobe Bryant's career.
Sorry, can I call? I need to talk about one more.
Oh yeah, just go
one
for
more.
It.
I know we could go on forever, but this is literally the last one. But
yeah,
I want to say this was the Gary Payton Karl Malone year. So I guess it was like it would be 2004, like the end of the season.
Yeah,
the very last game of the season, we were playing a game that had implications for our rank in the postseason.
Oh, yeah.
We played Portland at the Rose Garden. And if you're a Laker fan, you know that the Lakers never win at the Rose Garden. I don't know what it is. Like, the Lakers will win 65 games in a year, and two of their losses that year will be at the Rose Garden. So
yeah,
for whatever reason, that's what happens. We're in the Rose Garden, end of the season. Shaq fouls out of the game or something. Kobe hits like an impossible three-pointer to tie the game, and then he hits an impossible three-pointer to win the game in overtime, both at the buzzer. Portland is shocked. It's just like one of the many moments in Kobe's career where you just get that feeling where, like, if this fool touches the ball in the last 5 seconds, he's going to shoot it and make it, and the game is going to be over. Like, don't even let him touch it. Like, it happened later in his career. I want to say in the Dwight Howard year, where he had like 6 game winners that year or something stupid like that. But I don't know forever. I mean, you were just talking about that string of 50 point games. Like, right now, who is the hottest and like offensive player in the NBA? Stephen Curry. If Stephen Curry dropped 50 points in 10 straight games, everybody would like, you know, what would happen, dude? There would be like, it would be chaos in the NBA. Like, it's like Kobe did stuff that he made it look so easy at times that I think people took it for granted.
Oh, for sure.
But it's not like he was, you know, and it sucks. And hopefully this doesn't happen. I don't think it will, but hopefully it doesn't become a situation where like in the future, everyone's like, oh, Kobe scored 50 points in 10 straight games, but he probably took 50 shots. No, dude, like, he wasn't always this inefficient. And it's like Kevin Durant said, don't disrespect the guy. He's had a nice career. Like, he's won 5 rings for a reason. And it's sad that he sucks so bad now, but you don't have to focus on that. Just think about the good times.
Exactly. I remember that shot too, like, really, really well, because that, like, I was literally jumping up and down because I didn't know what else to do at that moment. And that was during, like, you know, the Reuben Patterson, Kobe stopper
Kobe
days.
Stopper,
and I think the one he tied the game with was on Reuben Patterson, because he did this weird thing where he crossed his legs because he misstepped or something. And he was like, oh, shoot, I'm just going to shoot it anyways.
And he just fires up this rainbow. Yeah.
I know. It was like such a terrible, terrible shot. But he made it like he usually did throughout his career. And then the last shot when he's coming off the curl, I think there was literally 0.6, 0.7. Like, there wasn't like, there was like pretty much less than a second left. Yeah. And he just had to arch it over like Theo Ratliff, like coming at him. And it was like a straight rainbow. And when I saw that shot go up, for some reason, I knew it was going in, because the trajectory and arc was so high that I was like, oh, is that going in? I was like, boom. And then all of a sudden, you know, the rest is history. So, yeah, man, Kobe has so many amazing plays. And, you know, if we even just talk about games outside of plays, you know, I remember his 65-point game against Portland, his 62 points against Dallas in 3 quarters. He just had so many amazing, amazing games. And, you know, we talk about Steph Curry and what he's doing now, and it's amazing. You know, Steph Curry's doing it in a way, I guess, in a different way that we've never seen before. But in terms of, like, statistically, it's easy to forget that, like, holy crap, Kobe, you know, won up that. Like,
oh, yeah,
that
dude.
Thing,
and,
you know,
like,
it's crazy.
The way that if you watch Steph Curry now, which, I mean, I've been doing, don't get me wrong, I'm not like a bandwagon fan or anything. I'm still obviously a Laker fan, but to the extent Warriors games are on NBA TV or something, I'll watch them because
you have to,
dude. They're playing so well right now, and the Lakers are playing so poorly, which factors into it. So it's like every once in a while you need to watch some good basketball to remind yourself why you love this game so much. But the way Steph Curry like toys with people, Kobe was just doing like even crazier stuff back in the day. You know what I mean? Like he would just... Again, it's like when Kobe would drop 62 on the Mavericks in three quarters, I remember thinking in my head, like, oh, Kobe, he shouldn't drop 62 in three quarters because everyone's going to say he shoots too much. But it's like you look back at his stats, dude. He shot 18 for 31. You know what I mean? Like he was so he scored 62 points in 32 minutes in that game. Like, what the heck is that? You know, like the stuff that he did was so absurd. And again, some people are going to remember Kobe for his, you know, ridiculous 40 shot attempt. Like, I mean, he took 40 in the 80 point game, but I mean like 40 shot attempts to get 40 points or whatever. But there's always going to be haters out there, right? And if you match up Kobe's top five games just statistically against anyone in NBA history, it's going to be hard to top those.
Yeah, and like you said, he did it in a variety of ways. Dunking, like his athleticism was off the charts back then, and you know, despite the fact that he still wasn't that much of a physical freak because of his small hands, like he pretty much milked his body for everything it was worth, pretty much because of how hard he worked. So I guess lastly, do you have like a favorite in-game Kobe moment where you actually saw him in person in game? And do you have like a special moment where you saw him do something crazy when you were at the Staples Center?
I mean, he's every game that I've been to that Kobe's been a part of have been pretty standard. I mean, in hindsight, it's like, I guess I could point back. I've gone to like several games, obviously, like every year I could try to go to like four or five games, but I don't know if I can pinpoint one. I mean, to the extent that he's had like the best games of his career, I don't think I've been there for any of those. But just in general, dude, it's like, you know, Kobe was always that guy who, I mean, I don't even remember the year, so this is pointless, but there was one year they played the Bobcats in LA. I was at the game. It was like, to date this a bit, Gerald Wallace was still on the Bobcats. And I just remember like the whole Laker team was just hard, like struggling. I don't know if it was a back-to-back or what, but they couldn't do anything. And it's one of those games where the fourth quarter you look up and Kobe's got over 40 points. And the only reason they won that game, despite how like poorly they played, was because Kobe was just there being Kobe.
Right. Right. So for me, I've gone to like tons of Laker games like in the past like 15 years, and there was one great game where I got to see Michael Jordan at the end of his last year with the Wizards too, and Kobe Bryant had a triple double on Michael.
Nice.
So that was really special because he got a triple double. But for me, like the best game that I've never seen before, you know, in person, getting to watch Kobe was I don't even remember the year anymore. It might have been 2007, 2008, but it was before Powell came. But essentially, it was against the Utah Jazz at home. And Kobe has this ridiculous third quarter where he scores 32 points. And I literally think he didn't miss a shot. He may have missed one shot, but he ended the game with like 53 points.
Oh my gosh.
That third quarter, he literally was like, he was dunking on Andre Kirilenko and Carlos Boozer. I mean, he was hitting threes all over the place. He didn't miss like a shot. For me, I was like, what the heck is going on? You know, it was like automatic. And to see that in person was just, you know, crazy. And for some of the kids that are growing up, maybe even as like early as like 2008 or something, it's I guess it's a privilege for us to have been able to literally see every game he's played and not just see it on playback, because it's such a different experience when you get to watch this stuff live and you kind of remember.
Yeah.
And you almost use like these games as like a landmark for where you were at in your life at that point, kind of, because you remember those games. You're like, oh yeah, and this point I was in school and I was doing this.
Oh yeah,
you
know? So dude. I mean,
it's kind of really cool
to play off that a little bit. The game where the infamous game where he hit two game winners, basically, or a game tying shot and a game winning shot against Phoenix in the playoffs.
Oh yeah, yeah.
To go up 3-1, I was at a friend's house working on an English project in high school, and it was just me and this guy were like, we were at this girl's house and she obviously had no idea, like she wasn't following the Lakers at all. And like we had a time set that like we're going to meet at this time and like this is when we're going to work on it. So we arrive at her house and both of us look at each other and we're like, yo, I'm sorry. This Laker game just went into overtime it just went into the fourth quarter when I was leaving my house and it was really close and we have
and you're
to
like,
turn it on. I'm sorry.
You're like, screw Great Gatsby, man. We're not finishing this paper.
Exactly. Like we have to turn on this game and we watched the entire like last 6 minutes of the fourth quarter and all of overtime and we're going crazy.
Did you end up getting an A on that paper?
It was a video project and yes, we got
That is funny. I probably just showed video of Kobe making the shot, and teacher's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, we should have.
Give it an A. So, I mean, yeah, it's been like a crazy, you know, I guess for Kobe 20 years and following his career, definitely been amazing. I guess to close the segment out on Kobe, let's talk about like our personal all-time ranks of where Kobe fits into like, I guess, our top five. Honestly, to narrow this down a bit, let's kind of only go with players that we've seen or players that we've heard of, like Michael Jordan, I guess would count. I honestly can't put Wilt Chamberlain or guys like that.
I haven't
seen them play.
Exactly. Oscar Everybody Robertson, puts in Bill Russell too. And I'm like, okay, dude, like Bill Russell, I'm sure he was very good. There was also like 10 or like less than 10 NBA teams when he was playing, you know? So,
yeah. So we can't really know. So with that said, I guess for my top five and where I see Kobe ranking in that top five, I think I'd obviously go Michael number one. And I just have Kobe number two, you know, because I followed his career. Kobe number two, I think I don't know how to rank the rest of them, but I think I'd have it would be some semblance of LeBron James, Shaq, and then who the heck am I missing? So Michael, Kobe, LeBron. Tim Duncan, there you go. So the last three I could like you pretty much go anywhere. I think LeBron's like been inching closer and closer. I don't know if that's just recency bias, but maybe Shaq is third and then LeBron and then Tim Duncan, something like that. I'm factoring the overall career, but I'm not factoring like, oh, this guy has this many rings, so he's automatically better. I'm kind of looking at it as, you know, from an actual objective basketball standpoint and what this guy was able to physically do on the court and then what his stats were able to do. I mean, all these guys have won rings, so it's not even, you know, at that point, you're just scraping for something. If you're like, oh, he had five rings, and LeBron only had two, yeah, so he doesn't deserve to be this. Whatever, you know. I just think in that respect, it goes Jordan for me, number one, Kobe number two, LeBron or Shaq three or four, and then Tim Duncan. Based off of what Kobe's been able to do with just the expectations that were already on him from the very beginning, and the fact that he was able to live up to it and surpass it is just like crazy to me. And he's never been a statistical darling, I don't think, but we look back on it and you look at his career, even with the last 3 years sinking his percentage, you're like, holy crap, Kobe was a career 45% shooter. What do you know? He's not that terrible after all. You know, his career average of 25 points, 5.3 rebounds, 4.8 assists, 1.5 steals. You know, I mean, that's amazing. And that's factoring in the last 3 years, which sunk everything. And then his rookie year when he only had like seven points, you know, and he was only averaging 15 minutes a game. I definitely put Kobe number two and definitely in the top five there. Some people will use statistics and whatnot to kind of hammer him down. I know Kevin Pelton put out something about how Kobe's not a top 10 all-time great because statistically he's not. And I was like,
whatever, dude.
Okay, you tell that to the coach that had to defend this guy the entire last 15 years, you know? I doubt he's looking at percentages and being like, oh, leave that guy open, don't guard him, you know?
And Kobe...
So for me, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, go ahead.
Yeah, for me, like, you know, Kobe's definitely in the top five, and I think right now I'll put him at number two, but, you know, LeBron may end up saying something about that. And I'm not even a LeBron guy, but he's just kind of pummeled me into submission because of how physically amazing he is, so... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think we probably have a similar list. I guess my order would be a little bit different. I love Kobe, but Michael Jordan, I have to put number one. That guy was just like the most unguardable player in NBA history. Number two, I would probably put LeBron. I know it's like stupid because his career isn't even over, but like, to me, that's like when LeBron, I don't even know if I would say Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens this year in the playoffs, right? But yeah. I don't even know if I would say LeBron is still in like his quote unquote prime, but like, I guess what I would consider LeBron's prime is like the last 5 years, where when this dude touched the ball, or basically until like, when did the Heat win their first championship? 2011?
Yeah.
So from that point on until now, you put the ball in this guy's hands and good luck. You know what I mean? Throw everyone in the world at this fool. If he wants to score, he's going to score. You know, he's going to score, or he's going to get someone a wide open three. And I think he's really good. I know he likes to stack the deck a little bit with his teammates. But I'll put LeBron up there.
That's fair. The dude's like a freight train, and like he's a combo of every good thing from these players.
He is.
You know, like, it's like Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Kobe Bryant, like rebounding of, you know, some crazy guy. I mean, the passing's like amazing.
And then number three is, I guess, even a guy that I would compare LeBron to the most in terms of basketball impact, which is Shaq. Shaq is, because I think his last, like, Shaq played a long time, man. I mean, he played like 18, 19 seasons. And so his last like six or so seasons, he wasn't the same Shaq, right?
Yeah.
And maybe for some people that'll leave like a bad taste in their mouth. For me, I'll always remember the Shaq that was averaging 30 points, 14 rebounds, 4 assists, and 3 blocks. You know?
Yeah.
Those were his stats when he won the MVP. And the thing that was crazy about Shaq was like, yeah, he wanted to get his, but this fool shot like 58% from the field. You know, like his career averages were 58% from the field. He had many 60% years. And if he wanted to shoot it 30 times, 25 times a game and average 35 points a game, he could have done it. But throughout his entire career, he was always, you know, especially with the Lakers and the triangle, he was hovering around 3 or 4 assists. And I think that, you know, Shaq was, not to say he's underrated, but I think people forget, because he played so many years on like a downswing.
Yeah.
That people forget just how dominant he was. But for sure, I have Kobe up there in the top five. Yeah. I mean, there's so many good players in NBA history. Among guards, I'd say Kobe's probably like the second best guard. And
for sure.
And yeah, it's hard to compare across position, but I have Kobe in the top five.
Yeah. So, you know, with that said, we congratulate Kobe on everything he's done. We still have this next year to kind of
see how things... He should still stop shooting.
Look, he should still stop shooting.
What we've said so far, we love Kobe so much, obviously, based on what we've said, but this fool should still stop shooting.
Okay, so before we change the tone of this, yay, Kobe. Clap.
Yay. Let's stop shooting.
So now we can transition into a little bit of present day talk. So I think I'll do the transition thing now here. Ready? Voice thing goes.
Blood boils when you speak. Yeah. Makes me weak, but I refuse to weep. Yet when I sleep, I feel tears trickling down my cheek.
All right, we're back, and we're still going to talk a little bit Kobe, but more in the present tense and sense of things. I want to talk to you quickly about your thoughts on the timing of this, because I thought it was interesting, and I don't want to be super conspiracy theorist of all this kind of stuff, but when that Golden State game happened, I was like so embarrassed to be a Laker fan, and I can put myself back into that moment, because not only was I embarrassed to be a Laker fan, I was so embarrassed for Kobe Bryant. Like, right. I put myself in his shoes, and I was like, oh my God, this is so bad. Like, so bad that I could feel the players on the court and even the crowd feeling sorry for him, even though I wasn't there. Like, I just felt this sense of, like, the crowd, like, every time he'd miss or, like, airball, they were just like, oh, we're not even going to boo you anymore. That was just pathetic, you know? And you keep shooting. And Klay Thompson, who grew up idolizing this guy, is probably like, I'm not even guarding you that hard, dude. Yeah. Like, I'm not trying to do stuff for you.
Just
and
being casual.
He was just failing in every single way. And it was such a bad, bad game to watch. And never mind the fact that Byron Scott benched D'Angelo Russell in the first quarter, who was the only one who could score, you know.
Yep.
But after that game, I was just like, this is the game, dude. This is the game that people get fired from.
Oh, like, yeah, yeah.
I was just like, something's got to change, you know, like, Byron Scott is going to, you know, people are ready to, you know, for Byron's head to be put on a stake pretty much. Oh, that was very graphic. My bad. But that's pretty much how I thought this thing was going to go down, because I was like, you know, there are a couple days before the next game. There's like a lot of time here. Something big is going to go down. Obviously, I didn't think it was going to be a Kobe retirement announcement, but I just thought it was funny in the way that it happened, that like, if you want to be super conspiracy theorist about this, this is obviously not how it went down, but if you want to be super conspiracy theorist about this, you could say that like Mitch realized the situation that, oh my God, this is the turning point. Like, people are leaving, like people are really going nuts and the sky is falling after this Golden State game. How do we keep them on board for this season? Because I don't want to fire Byron Scott, because one, you know, we're thinking about the future. We don't want to make hasty decisions and we probably want to keep our top three pick, but how do I keep them on board without them losing their heads?
Right.
Okay, I know. Hey, Kobe, you know how you told me in private that you're probably definitely done? Why don't you make an announcement during Thanksgiving just so we can turn this whole season and frame it into a, even though people kind of already knew it was like a Kobe memorial tour, it was never official. But once it becomes official, it changes the entire like tone of the season, right? You see how the price, ticket prices for every game
up like crazy.
Especially on the road, even more, because like everybody wants to see him. You know, it just changed changed the tenor of the entire season, and people almost forget that they're so mad at Byron Scott that they want to kill him, pretty much. You know, so that's my little conspiracy theory about it. It's not true, but like it's just interesting the timing of things and how
you really do
kind of forget that for a second. You forget all the crap that's happening and you're just kind of focused on Kobe. And I think that's the effect it has for maybe people who aren't as tuned in to everything that's going on as we are.
Right.
I mean, so I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, I could totally see that. I guess I don't really view it as that. I view it as, and I think if you asked me the same exact question in September, I would have said the same thing. And my thought from the very beginning was the reason Kobe was being noncommittal, and I know there were all those things coming out about how he talked to Jordan about how this is his last year and stuff like that. I think he probably talked to Jordan about how this was probably his last year. That being said, I was always of the camp that Kobe was going to come in, see how things went, see how our young guys were developing, sort of wait in the wings for free agency. And if we looked like we can build a team that could do something next year, like through free agency, and he felt like he could still make an impact based on how he did this season, he would come back. And I think what probably happened was this guy's not dumb. You know, sometimes we all feel like the front office is really stupid, and we'll get into more of that in coming up here. But
yeah,
Kobe's not dumb. Like, how many times are you going to shoot 1-for-14 or 4-for-20 before you realize you just can't do this anymore? You know, how many times are you going to get completely shut down by, you know, CJ Miles before you just realize maybe I can't, you know, CJ Miles is like better than me now. Yeah. And Kobe, I don't think he's dumb. I think he slowly was starting to realize it. The team was 2 wins in 2-and-14. We're on pace to win like 10 games this season. And he was probably just like, you know what? I've given it everything I have. There are other things that I'm kind of interested in. I see other career paths. 20 years has been an amazing run. I don't want to play for another team. I have a family. You know, his kids are becoming like, I don't know how old they are, but they're going to be teenagers soon probably. Yeah. And, you know, all this stuff. And Thanksgiving to me was like, okay, the Lakers played Golden State on, I think, like, what was it, like the Tuesday before Thanksgiving?
Yep.
They had Wednesday practice, although Kobe didn't practice if you were following Twitter. Thursday was Thanksgiving. Friday, they had another practice. I'm not sure if Kobe practiced. And then Saturday was Portland, an away game. And I think that at some point over Thanksgiving weekend, Kobe decided that this was it. And
he had time to assess himself.
He had time
with his family.
To assess it. He was sitting down with his family, and he probably said, you know, they all talked about it, and his daughters were probably like, yeah, you know, they're old enough to like give an opinion at this point. You know,
like, you're washed up, Dad.
You're washed up, Dad. Paul George is so much better. Why can't Paul George be our dad? No, just kidding. I'm kidding.
That's terrible.
I'm kidding. But
and Kobe's like, he is
25-year-old from Palmdale, California. No, but Paul George, I feel like, is as old as Kobe's kids. So, you know, this fool's like a baby. But anyway.
They're like, Kobe, Paul George is your daddy now. On the court, that is.
All right. But besides, like, the imitation of Kobe's daughters talking smack to him, which I'm sure happens at the Bryant household, you know, right. They probably all sat down together and talked about this and probably, like, you know, just at some point, it's so logical that you can't deny it. You know what I mean? Like, you can beat around the bush or you could just be like, yeah, you know, you're right. I can't really do this anymore. It hurts me every day when I wake up. Yeah. CJ Miles is better than me. It's time to retire.
Yeah, I mean, and Kobe did a good job trying to put up a front after that Golden State game. You know, he made some ridiculous, ludicrous comments about how, you know, after the Golden State, I was so frustrated, I was frustrated with the performance, but even more so with his post-game interview, just because he didn't talk about how washed up he was at all. He was just talking about, man, my team needs to find me better shots. You know, it doesn't matter if I scored 81 or 35 points. We would have lost this game anyways. Stupid. Like, we need to find a way to get me easier shots and, you know, all that stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh, how does this guy not even acknowledging the fact that he had like the worst shooting performance of his career, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just crazy. And then, but clearly that was just like a front to kind of like deal with what, you know, probably he couldn't even conceive what was going on at that moment. So he was like, I'm just going to act like how I usually acted my entire career. But mm-hmm. for the first time, Kobe can't prove the doubters wrong because he just can't, you know, we've seen this so many times where Kobe could.
Yeah.
But yeah, at this point, it's just not possible physically. And I think you're right that, you know, the Thanksgiving weekend gave him time to assess his situation and kind of calm down and realize this is not worth it to go through all of this again and not know how it's going to affect me physically moving forward or where this is going. So with that said, let's kind of get into the actual games and like what we've seen the last pretty much week. Let's start with the Portland game. What did you think of the Portland game? So Kobe still ended up shooting the most shots out of anybody, 7 for 20, while shooting the worst pretty much out of anybody. But he had some nice plays, 21 points, 2 assists, 2 rebounds. But what did you think about this Portland game?
Sorry, I was just thinking thank God, in the back of my mind, I thought we were going to start with like an in-depth analysis of the Golden State game. And I'm like,
man, that was
thank God. No, let's like just pretend that never happened. But yeah, no, the Portland game, the Lakers, the last 3 games, I mean, yeah, I'll venture back to the Golden State game, but even before that, dude, even like the Toronto game, I think was before Golden State. I can't remember how far back at this point, but for a while, if you listen like 3 or 4 podcasts back, we were talking about how it seemed like they were doing a little bit of a better job. It seemed like they were slowly showing improvements like in defensive rotations. And at some point, though, after that, the entire team has like, I don't know if they've tuned out Byron Scott, if they've just quit on him. I don't know what they're doing, but they look horrendous. Like, I haven't watched that much Philadelphia 76ers, but I can't imagine that we're that much better than the Philadelphia 76ers.
No, we're not.
Record-wise, we're only 2 wins better than them. But I'm saying, like, in terms of, I know we play them head-to-head, like, pretty soon, don't we?
Tuesday. Tomorrow.
Literally tomorrow. If we lose that game tomorrow, which, I mean, is, like, within the realm of possibility that we lose that game, I don't know what's going to happen. It's
heads are going to fly. I don't know. Maybe. I keep saying that. Never happens.
It never happens. But, you know, it's – so to get back to your main question, the Portland game, D'Angelo Russell looked great. Julius Randle looked great. Jordan Clarkson looked great. Kobe looked whatever. I mean, he shot 35%, which is actually better than what he normally does. But it's like, okay, then we put together a little bit of offense. Nobody plays defense, and Portland's backcourt drops like 57 points on us. You know,
yeah, 29 points for Damian, 5 threes, 5 for 11 from threes. CJ McCollum, 28 points, 4 for 7. Ridiculous defense.
You know, CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard are very good, but for God's sake, Damian Lillard shoots 42%. He does average 25 a game. CJ McCollum shoots 46%. I mean, These guys are explosive. Like, that's two really damn good guards. But the rest of their lineup is... Noah Vonleh started for power forward at them for them in that game. That fool is shooting 37%. Like, I almost cringe to think back to the time where Noah Vonleh was considered like he should go ahead of Julius Randle in the draft. You know, this fool is shooting 37% from the field. Al-Farouq Aminu is shooting 38%. I mean, he was never a great shooter. He got a little hype last year. They have no bench whatsoever.
But we got out-rebounded 46-33. I mean, that tells you, like, everything you need to know about the hustle or lack thereof.
It's just like when you're playing Metta World Peace 20 minutes a game and Brandon Bass 18 minutes a game as your backup center. Like, Brandon Bass is a fine backup power forward in the NBA, but not a backup center. It's just there's no sense of, like, planning. You know what I mean? The game just starts. We come in and run this horribly clunky offense. We can't get in a rhythm.
And you just hope, you pretty much just hope that our big three somehow gets hot and have decent looking games at the end.
Exactly. And that's the sad part, right? It's like Jordan Clarkson is shooting 48% from the field this year, and he's shooting like what, some absurd, like 43% from three. Like, at this point, this is not a fluke. Like, we're 16 games into the season. Not to say he's going to for sure finish at 43% from three, but like, his point being, he's significantly improved as a 3-point shooter. He's been getting a lot more steals lately. I guess, like, the moral of the story here, though, is Randle, Clarkson, and Russell, none of those guys are Kobe alpha. They're all, like, 19, you know what I mean? They're not Kobe alpha guys who are going to take 25 shots a game. So it's not even a matter of, like, are those guys going to get hot? Because guess what? In this game, all three of our young guns shot above 50%. Randle shot 8 for 13 in only 30 minutes. He put up 16, 6, 4 assists, 3 steals, and a block in 30 minutes, okay?
Yep.
Jordan Clarkson shot 8 for 15. D'Angelo Russell shot 6 for 11 and had 5 assists and 4 rebounds. And Clarkson had 4 steals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? So those guys played extremely well, but they didn't take 20 shots. Kobe took 20 shots. Metta World Peace took 6, you know? Like,
there's a lack of common sense going on here, essentially.
It really is a lack of common sense. I mean, that's what I'm sort of beating around the bush here, but that's what it is. It's, we run out here and we run an offense, which, what the hell kind of offense in the world are you running where you have Julius Randle, Jordan Clarkson, D'Angelo Russell all shooting above 50% in a game, and you're running plays to post up Brandon Bass or to post
or
up
Roy Hibbert
or to post up Metta Freaking World Peace.
You know? It's a new drinking game, you know, when every time they give Roy Hibbert a post up and he actually do it, you got to drink pretty much.
It feels like that. So, you know, what they're doing out there is so illogical. And it only was compounded in the Indiana game where I felt like Indiana was basically trying to give away the game and we still couldn't take it. And I mean, Pincus would go, oh, you're surprised we lost to 11-5 Indiana? Ha ha ha. Maybe you should readjust your expectations. Ha ha ha. And my response to that is Indiana shot 41% from the field and they had 15 turnovers. They were handing this game to the Lakers on the silver platter, and the Lakers, because Kobe Bryant and Metta World Peace combined for 20 points in 30 field goal attempts. You know, is, you know, like over 30 possessions to get 20 points. Like, that's not acceptable.
Yeah, it's been really kind of sad. On the one hand, I like the Portland game and the fact that those are the kind of losses I want, because at least even though we didn't get to see the full extent of what these guys could did, our big three all had really good games. But like you said, it could have been so much more. You know, if this was D'Antoni, these would be 25-point games for each of these guys. D'Angelo would have 10 assists or something ridiculous like that, because we wouldn't have Kobe shooting 7 for 20 or getting the most shots at the worst percentage, essentially. Quick segue, my friend gave a great description of how he views Kobe Bryant this season. He's like, dude, Kobe's just like that really uncool dad who thinks he's still cool and keeps trying to remind people of all the cool stuff he used to do. And he keeps trying to, he wears his cap backwards and tries to go to his kids, like, hang out with his kids, like friends and everything, and you're just like, oh my god, dad, please stop, please, for the love of god, you're hurting our future, dad, you're hurting my future with girls, you're hurting my future at these parties, please stop trying to barge your way into this. You know, it's like a perfect analogy for what Kobe's doing. He's hurting the future of these guys. He's like barging his way into the conversation here, and then, you know, it's almost like a you know, a can't win situation with Kobe, where he announces his retirement and people are nostalgic, so he uses that to his advantage in the Pacers game, and he's like, well, everybody loves me again, so I'm just gonna shoot 20 shots, and like, if I hit a three, I'm gonna act like I just hit like 5 shots in a row, and like start making these faces and like jawing and like kind of smiling and people. It's like so annoying because he's not even in the actual game anymore. It's just like, let me see what I can do out here to amuse myself. He's like playing like a totally different game. Which is sad, because he did have a couple nifty passes, but now Kobe only makes like a nifty pass if he knows it's gonna like draw attention to himself. Like, I think he had a really nice whip pass to Roy Hibbert, but besides that fact, yeah, there's really nothing going on in these games that resembles any sort of actual basketball team play. And we've been saying this the entire season, but you have to just kind of pick and choose what you want to like focus in on to find any sort of positives, essentially.
Yeah,
because if you look at the games collectively, there's nothing going on.
It's terrible.
So yeah, I mean, the Portland game, at least our big three did well. Clarkson's been like on some crazy tear the last two games, shooting efficiently. The Indiana game, I mean, 22 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists on 8-for-15 shooting. The guy has been tearing it up, and he should be shooting the most shots on this team, clearly, but he's too unselfish for that. He's too efficient for that.
Yeah.
It's sad in that respect. I want to talk about Julius Randle a little bit. So he played really well in the Portland game, and I was really encouraged by the fact that he was hitting his jump shot, mm-hmm. and they were kind of just leaving him open, and he was just like, okay, I'll hit it. I remember there was an article throughout the week talking about how the Lakers really want to rework his jump shot.
Yep.
I don't think it's happened yet, but clearly they want to work on it with him, so it's not like a weird knuckleball thing, but the fact that he can still hit them decently right now and kind of gain some confidence is a good thing. He shot 8-for-13 in the Portland game, so I thought that was encouraging. I thought he took a step back in the Indiana game. He had 11 points, 12 rebounds, but he had four turnovers and was 4-for-11 from the field. And holy crap, in the fourth quarter, like, I honestly, excuse me for using this word, but I was like, oh my god, is this guy retarded? He's like, because he looks like he's retarded out there. Like, there's some times when Julius Randle really plays like he's stupid. Like, I'm just like,
he makes bad
oh
decisions.
My god, like, how are you like a lottery pick right now? Sometimes he looks amazing, but there were like three or four consecutive plays where he either got called for travel, got called for an offensive foul, or just got blocked on his shot. And I was just like, oh my god.
Okay, and I guess my counter to that would be, Julius Randle's 21, and when next season starts, his third season in the NBA, technically, he's still going to be 21. And he, you know, he looks a little bit older than he is. We all know he was drafted last year, so like we feel like he should be older. He's got like a really mature body, I guess, but he plays like a rookie a lot. And those types of mistakes that he makes in like crucial moments where he's just like barreling into guys and doing stupid stuff, honestly, it doesn't really bother me that much. But I don't know. You touched on this, but like reworking his jump shot, the combination of that and theoretically having a new coach this year, which we can talk. I'm sorry, next year, which we could talk about a little bit later, is going to, I think, skyrocket this guy's shooting percentage. I mean, over the course of the season, we've seen his percentage slowly creeping up. It started at about like low 40s, and now it's creeping up to about 44. I could easily see him finishing around 45 or, you know, 45, 46 ish, which is not amazing for your starting power forward. But considering he's a rookie, considering he's playing in Byron Scott's system, that is not that bad. And that's also considering he has no jumper. So it's like you add a jump. If they completely rework his jumper, like they allege they're going to do, if they get a new coach, all these things could like, this guy can be really, really good. I mean, our young guys are not the issue. And to the extent you're sitting out there watching these young guys and being like, oh, I'm not that blown away, you need to like readjust your glasses, because these guys are like doing things that people, like kids their age, should not be doing. Like, look at the Philadelphia 76ers. I know we only have two more wins than them, but they have like a whole host of young guys, none of whom are really doing what any of the young guys in the Lakers have done. If any of them are listening, they're going to trash me for that. But yeah, no, you know, it's like we've seen some really good signs. And yeah, I mean, I'm not that low on Randall. I don't know if you wanted to talk more about the Indiana game or.
I'm not that low on Randall. So I guess what you're saying is that Byron Scott's not doing a good job developing these guys, unlike what Pincus thinks.
He's doing a terrible job, like what Pincus thinks. Pincus has no idea what he's talking about with regards to this. That guy knows.
No, totally.
Yeah, honestly, Pincus is one of my favorite writers, but his blind defense of Byron Scott is so annoying to me.
I mean, you can tell, like, Byron Scott's clearly holding this guy's back, and they, you know, just because they're so talented, they'll have games where they'll overcome that and overcome the system, essentially. So it's not that I'm too worried about Randall. It's just like when he makes mistakes, it's like glaringly like bad. And I agree with you, like once we get an actual coach in that'll actually work with him, like, because you can tell this guy's not being, I feel like nobody's talking to this guy, you know, that he makes these same mistakes over and over again, and then they get worse. It's like if the coach was actually doing a good job developing, why isn't he putting Randall in a more consistent position to succeed night in and night out? You know, yeah. So it's just frustrating from that end. Not so much Randall himself, but like you said, like the coach, and that nobody seems to be getting through to this guy, as talented as he is. Like one night he'll look amazing, the next night he'll look like a rookie who's like lost and like, you know. It's just, you can tell there's like so many things going wrong here. Clarkson seems to be the only one unfazed by it because he's like so efficient and he's just like, yeah, okay, I'll just get my shots when I can. But I guess we can also talk about D'Angelo Russell here. I thought the Portland game, he looked great. He kind of got going a little later, but I thought he looked great. He was hitting like a bunch of mid-range jump shots again, and then he had 5 assists as well. Indiana game was kind of a different story. Just because Kobe wanted to, I don't know, shoot 20 shots and do his thing, I guess. But D'Angelo never really got it going. He had that nifty little Rajon Rondo like fake behind the back pass thing into a like a scoop layup shot. But outside of that,
he does that a lot. It's weird.
Yeah, he had a subpar game against Indiana. But I was really encouraged by the game he had in Portland, where he had 16 points, 5 assists, and 4 rebounds. You know, he's dangerous in the pick and roll. He's dangerous in the mid-range. I just wish he shot way more shots than he is right now, because 6 for 11, you know. I wanted him to have like 6 for 11 in
the Portland game, yeah.
And 4 for 11 Indiana. I want him to have like a Emmanuel Mudiay 3 for like 15, like 17 shot attempt game, you know. Like, I almost want to see how much like attempts he's had. Like, what's the highest attempts he's had this season? I'm looking it up right now, but it's like definitely not enough. Like, the most he shot is 16, you know, and that game he was 7 for 16, you know. Like, I want him to shoot more so we can see just how lethal this guy is, because if he was putting up 18 shots a game or something, he'd be hitting at least 7 of those shots, you know, 7 or 8, and right. His scoring would be at least 15-16 points. Like, and I guess this is a good way to segue into how good D'Angelo Russell is in comparison to his, you know, mates in the draft class. And let's be clear, this draft class is like amazingly scary at this point. I think someone put up the draft class's PER, and it's insane how many of these guys are so good. So D'Angelo actually in PER ranks 12th. Okay, so we want to talk about the guys we've been comparing him with, and Lakers fans usually compare him with Emmanuel Mudiay and, you know, Jahlil Okafor. Emmanuel Mudiay ranks 20th in PER here, you know, compared to D'Angelo Russell, who's 12th. So, I mean, just looking at that, you can see, like, okay, one guard is not getting the same opportunity as the other guard. You increase the opportunity and the usage of D'Angelo Russell, who's been pretty efficient in comparison, and is going to be amazing, you know? To go off of that even more, with regards to point guard real plus minus, out of 82 guards, you know, D'Angelo ranks 73rd, and Mudiay is 82nd, you know. Like, people keep thinking that, like, oh, why do we get D'Angelo when Mudiay is so much more athletic and stuff? Like, Mudiay is having a historically horrible shooting percentage season. Like, historically, based off of how many attempts he's taking, like, oh, this is really sad, actually. I think he ranks, like, 2nd and Kobe ranks 3rd. Like, the worst field goal percentages, like, in the league right now. But the opportunities he's getting in terms of being able to handle the ball and shoot, and also he has so many turnovers, he has so many field goal attempts, it's crazy. We want to expand this to like Jahlil Okafor. Jahlil Okafor's plus minus is terrible. Like it's terrible. I don't have the exact stats with me, but Moody and Jahlil like rank like in the bottom of real plus minus. In comparison to D'Angelo, and you'd say like, oh, you know, like I guess if I threw out the Moody and Jahlil Okafor stats first, people would say, oh, their teams suck. Of course, their plus minus is going to be bad. Well, that doesn't explain why D'Angelo has a better real plus minus than these guys, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, just to expand on the D'Angelo stuff, if you want to compare him against other rookie guards, I think he's actually, like, to the extent that those other rookie guards play, he's, like, pretty much second in PER to TJ McConnell. I mean, if you look at just the PER without filtering at all, Devin Booker is technically second. But Devin Booker, like, hardly plays. I mean, he didn't play in it. He didn't play in a bunch of games, and he doesn't really handle the ball, and he barely shoots it. Even when he does play, he plays like 12 minutes a game. But
yeah,
so D'Angelo is doing just fine.
You just wish he had the opportunity, and yeah. I mean, it's so frustrating. Part of it is on him too, I guess. But I get it. Kobe's on the floor with him. Like, what can you do? Out of respect, this guy's not going to take and jack up these shots. You know, like, I get it. But part of me is also like, I can't wait. At least we have official word that Kobe's done after this season, and it can open things up for these guys, because the sooner we get to see the real potential of these guys, the better it's going to be for us. And I hope that happens somewhere down the line, and we can get, maybe after the All-Star break, Kobe really just like, I honestly don't know how to, if Kobe plays this entire season, I don't know what Kobe I'm trying to expect here, but I just hope eventually he just calms down and just simmers down and lets the guys do whatever. I'd hope it's not this whole tour of him just taking a whole bunch of shots to relive some moments or relive memories.
I think it is going to be that. But I mean, look, I still think in spite of that, D'Angelo can temper that a little bit. Look, if you're looking to just last year, Andrew Wiggins was the number one pick in the draft. And in November of his rookie season, he averaged 12 points a game. He showed some signs in the second half, of November. And if you look at D'Angelo, 4 out of his last 6 games of November, he scored in double digits. Wiggins went from 12 the following December. He went to 15. January, he went to 20. You know what I mean? It's like he got better and better. And then his points went down, but he got more efficient. So it's like, there's still a long season to the point where, like, by the end of his rookie season, Wiggins was averaging 23 points a game. D'Angelo's not going to average 23 points a game just because that's not the system we have for him here. But it's a long season, and we've just finished the first full month of it, basically.
Right.
He still came out of that averaging about 11 points a game and 5 rebounds and 3 assists, only playing 27 minutes a game. Yeah. And if he plays the whole December like he played the last half of November and even builds upon that, it's just going to be pretty absurd.
Right. And I think the last few games he's had, he's averaging something along like 15 points, like 6-7 rebounds and like 4 assists or something. So that's like amazing, you know, the last few games he's had. So,
and one thing that you can't really overlook with him is, like, it's very impressive in my opinion that even when his shot isn't going down, he tries to contribute in other ways by grabbing rebounds, trying to make assists, you know, whatever.
Yeah, and I think it's also encouraging that even in spite of how frustrated he probably is, that he's just not going to shoot, like, 19 times, you know, because it doesn't benefit anybody, you know, even though, I mean, the only problem here is that despite the fact that he's seemingly doing the right things, his coach continues to say weird-ass stuff, like, and he singles him out. Byron Scott had this quote over the weekend where
can't even talk about this, but go ahead.
He was like, you know, D'Angelo, he just keeps making the same mistakes over and over again. And I just have to tell this guy, you know, if you keep making the same mistakes over and over again, I'm going to have to sit you. And I'm just like, are we watching the same thing here? Because what mistakes is he making over and over again, just outside of the fact that he's hitting shots, the only guy who can hit shots sometimes, and you bench him, you know? So ludicrous to me that he would single out D'Angelo. It's fine if you're going to talk about people's mistakes, but to single out a guy who hasn't made any glaring mistakes in the last week or so is, like, insane to me.
Yeah, it's just dumb. I mean, it's like we said in the Indiana game. You have Kobe Bryant and Meta World Peace, who you stupidly play for 27 minutes against Indiana, combining to go 6 for 30, combining to score 20 points on 30 field goal attempts. You know, and if you want to count possessions used, even more possessions used, because Kobe had a turnover and, like, they each shot free throws. Like, that's an extra, like, 4 possessions. You know what I mean? Point being, that's extremely
inefficient. I mean, what can you do? But, you know, both of them hit clutch threes, so that's all that matters to Byron, right? Oh, I see it worked out. You know, Meta hit a three, Kobe hit a three to almost, you know, get us within, like, tying the game. So that's why I play those veteran guys, because they know what to do. So all this BS from BS, what can you say? With that said, we're kind of going all over the place, so we'll kind of end it here in terms of our recap. We'll wrap the show up coming up next.
And there is no limit to how good you can be.
Man, I really appreciate that. Those are strong words that I'm definitely going to take into consideration.
Okay, we are back to close out the show. But before we close out the show, we wanted to mention one last topic and thought that we wanted to point out. Tommy, you had a thought about, I guess, if there's one thing that we can take away from this Kobe thing, despite many people being sad about it, like, what are the positives we can glean from it moving forward as an organization outside of the obvious, the young guys are going to be able to play? So, Tommy?
So, I guess my thing is always one thing that everybody always talks about is the fact that Kobe, the media is obsessed with this notion that nobody wants to play with Kobe, which, I mean, that may carry some weight, but I think the very best players don't care. At the very worst, they don't care. I think some of them affirmatively want to play with Kobe because they recognize his greatness, but I think at worst, they just don't care. They're going to get paid. They're going to play. If they're alphas like Carmelo Anthony, for just to give one example, they don't care if Kobe's out there. They're going to get their 20 plus shots a game anyway. I think the one positive thing that can come from this is coaching. This is something nobody ever talks about. People probably think about it subconsciously, but nobody talks about this in the media. But one of the reasons Byron Scott is our coach is because of Kobe Bryant. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to recruit a top tier, top notch, top quality coach when you have to bring this guy in and be like, oh, by the way, here's 20 year veteran Kobe Bryant.
20 year old Kobe Bryant. Sign me up.
But 20 year veteran Kobe Bryant, and he's going to give you a really hard time about what anything you try to do. If you're trying to bring in Mike D'Antoni's system, good luck. He's not going to run it. You're trying to, you know, basically the only coach that could get through to Kobe at this stage in his life, really for like the last 10 years, is Phil Jackson. And we're not getting Phil Jackson. So why do we have Byron Scott? Byron Scott is a guy that the Lakers felt, and probably were right, that they could put him in for a couple of years. It could fill the gap. It could be a seat warmer. Kobe could come in and do whatever he wants. Byron's not going to get pissed off at him. Kobe's not going to get pissed off at Byron. They'll just, like, they'll be content with each other.
Yeah.
We won't have any drama. Like, Byron's career, in my opinion, is tied to Kobe. They're not going to fire Byron this year, no matter how bad we do. I know that's very depressing to a lot of people, including me. But no matter how bad we do, I don't think they fire Byron this year because it's Kobe's last year. But yeah, you know, I just think that that's something that people don't really talk about. You know, to the extent top tier, top quality coaches or, you know, become available, or assistant coaches from really good teams, Luke Walton become available, you know, it's going to be a very nice point to our benefit to be like, we have three young guns. We have Larry Nance, who's actually showed some signs that, like, a lot of rookies don't show. You know what I mean? Like, that guy can, he's going to be a rotation. I don't know if he's going to be a starter, but he can play basketball. We have three really good young guns and some other pieces. Lou Will's on a multi-year deal. We have $65 million in cap space this year. Like, I mean, I just mentioned Lou Will. We have Nick Young also off our bench. We have pieces. If you can show all of this to a coach and be like, you have all of this, you have $65 million in cap space, and Kobe Bryant is gone, it's a very it suddenly becomes a very attractive situation for a coach, in my opinion, because it's like, okay, I can come in. These young guys are very young to the point where I can mold them and have them learn my system and make them exactly who I want them to be. I can have the draft pick to the extent that we keep our draft pick. I can have $65 million in cap space to pursue the free agents I want to pursue. So, like, to the extent we don't get Kevin Durant, I can choose who's the next guy in line.
Yeah.
And on top of all of that, I don't have to do anything with regards to, can this system accommodate Kobe? Can these free agent signings accommodate Kobe? Can my, you know, how I want the rookies to play accommodate Kobe? Kobe's out of the picture, you know? Right. So I think that's a huge, largely underrated part of this whole Kobe leaving thing. It's not going to be the, and I almost get sad in a sense, in the sense that if we end up signing Durant, everyone's going to be like, and Durant would like screaming, like disagree with this, but everyone's, I know the media is going to spin this as, oh, the second Kobe retires, the Lakers land a top tier free agent. But
yeah,
for me, it's not even about that. I think the free agents, like we always had a shot. I just think the coaches was the big thing that nobody talked about. That look at the guys we interviewed when we interviewed Byron. It's not like we were interviewing world beaters. You know what I mean? It was like, yeah, Mike Dunleavy and like Lionel Hollins, we might've talked to once, or, you know, it was just like, it was guys who like, and even then we don't know how interested, like, those guys clearly weren't that interested to the extent that a lot of those guys like accepted jobs immediately when they had other interviews. You know, it's, I think that trying to convince a veteran coach to come in, even a rookie coach to come in here and be like, hey, you know, good luck trying to run your system and also deal with Kobe. Like, yeah, now that that's not a factor anymore, I think that is a huge positive for us.
Yeah. And it just opens up a whole bunch of possibilities, just because even a rookie coach like Brad Stevens, like, he wants to make his stamp on the league. You know, how is he going to do that with Kobe, who is like on a different agenda and path like the entire season, right? You know, just having Kobe out of the picture, it's just been an awkward situation throughout the season, trying to, you know, make him happy and dangle this carrot and try to entertain him kind of. And then on the meanwhile, trying to develop the guys, it's just been an awkward situation altogether. The fact that we have to look to the summer again to find some hope and optimism is kind of sad, but, you know, I just know, like you said, once it comes summer and we're able to really assess our situation, we'll be able to do it more freely and more flexibly than we ever have before. You know, there's not going to be any talk of, well, is Kobe going to come back and how much money is he going to have to take, or what coach is going to, you know, be able to implement the young guys and Kobe. Like, it'll just be literally a fresh new start, and one that will not have, sadly, Kobe Bryant, but, you know, like we said, it'll open up a lot of things, but also won't have Byron Scott. So this is the first part of a two-part series of the old school mentality leaving, and the Lakers will finally be able to move forward, thankfully. So I agree with you on that point, that it starts with Kobe, and then it'll start with the coach. Once Byron Scott is gone, we're going to get a new coach who will want to enter this system and this team with, you know, a grand vision, essentially, and hopefully the free agent that we get will be aligned with that vision. So better things ahead this summer. With that said, that wraps up our episode. We're kind of all over the place, but, you know, that's what Kobe does to you, I guess. So follow us at Lakers Legacy Pod on Twitter. That's at Lakers Legacy Pod. Keep rating and reviewing us. The more you rate and review us, the more minutes, more fourth quarter minutes D'Angelo Russell gets in his NBA lifespan. So start now, because you can help him get more minutes in the fourth quarter.
This is pandering.
I know. Just rate and review iTunes, man. We're going to get like 20 reviews like after this, dude. So we'll see about that. With that said, hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving weekend. We are in December tomorrow. Amazingly, we're in December tomorrow for Tankapalooza 2015 against the Sixers. So that should be a very interesting game to watch. I'm going to laugh if we lose, but hopefully our young guys will do well, and D'Angelo can show up Jahlil Okafor a little bit. The problematic Jahlil Okafor, the problem child. With that said, thanks for listening. We are out. Tommy.
Byron sucks.
Byron sucks. Bye. I'm not the
pushing and pulling and wishing that Messiah would be coming soon with his deliverance. I am the...
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO, expect great savings and a whole lot more.